some of the news for Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Reggie Johnson from New York City. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate and ecological emergency. Now, previously on this show, we suggested that rationing of fuel and electricity would be a necessary part of addressing the climate crisis. We signaled we would come back to this and work toward developing the idea further. And this is an ongoing effort. You don't design a new system for fuel and power in the world in one radio episode or even two, right? But today we want to take another step toward a more serious draft proposal. We repeat, draft proposal, not dogmatic program. Matt has written up some thoughts along these lines, and he's going to share them with us today. This is not the Extinction Rebellion proposal. It's not really a formal proposal or a specific call. We're just exploring this topic that's really so important to the climate. So, Matt, what do you think about rationing fuel and electricity?
I think we have to do it. To take it from the top, the way to solve the climate crisis is to cut emissions. We know this. The sources of emissions that we can control are mainly fuel and electricity, industrial use and household use. We have zero emission sources of those things. I mean, as in we have ways of producing those things without burning carbon. Mm-hmm. And we've tried letting the market develop those things, and it's going incredibly slowly, and it's not working on a timeline that's useful for the climate. I'm thinking solar, wind power, geothermal, even nuclear. It's just taking a very long time for these things to come online. We've also tried asking people to use less electricity and to use less fuel. And overall, population-wide, that hasn't worked. Consumption just goes up and up and up. I think significant cuts in emissions will require mandatory reductions in consumption. Mandatory, not just voluntary. We have to figure out how to ration electricity vehicles and how to ration fuel. I don't see any other way.
You know, we really don't have another choice, Matt. We just don't.
And rationing is temporary, not forever. As we build up zero emission power sources, we can increase that ration. And if we get to the point where we can sustainably meet high levels of consumption with zero emission sources, then we could eliminate the ration entirely. So we're talking about a window of rationing, not an eternity of rationing.
Yeah, and like you suggested before, Matt, it's not a death sentence, right?
Mm-mm. But there is this, so how do we get it started? Huge problem. How do we begin this process? Should we start at like the lowest level of ration that we think we can pull off and then immediately go to it, like from unlimited power consumption, which is close to what we currently have, to the minimum? Or do we cut gradually, reduce the ration gradually, and then move it back up as green power comes online? I'm not sure which would work better. But the second one could go like this. We impose a limit of, say, 500 kilowatt hours per month per household, and then gradually decrease it. I'm throwing out round numbers here. This is not based on any real modeling. In fact, it will probably have to ultimately be quite a bit lower than 500 kilowatt hours. But I'll use 500 as just a round hypothetical just to explore the concept. For those who don't know, the average household consumption in the United States is somewhere between 700 and 900 kilowatt hours. So the way to get this to work practically, we have to reform people's habits. We have to change habits. Waking up with the sun becomes a new habit. Reading by the window instead of under the light becomes a new habit. Cold water instead of hot water becomes a new habit. Our current habit in most of the industrialized world is virtually unlimited electricity. We just assume that when we turn on the light will come. When we flip the switch, the light will come. And once we smash that psychological barrier, I wonder if it would be comparatively easy to go lower and lower from there. Once we teach people to ration and life and work expectations shift around that, then people will discover that we can survive with less. On the practical level, it seems to be above all a question of habits, reformulating our habits. This isn't really a complicated concept of rationing electricity. Everybody understands quantitative limits and adjusting their behavior to those limits. It's almost universal among humans to understand that concept. Even children understand that if they get one ice cream cone and there is only so much ice cream, then once that ice cream runs out, there is no more ice cream. Even little children learn that very early. A more adult example is a bank account. I'm aware that we have complicated debt options that make bank account limits sort of fuzzy, but the basic concept of having a finite amount of money to spend is almost universally understood. You incur costs and penalties if you spend more money than you have in your bank account. You can check and see how much there is left and make consumption decisions accordingly. So rationing of fuel and power is going to be like that. And like I say, it's about habit formation.
Yeah, and it's about class, right?
Well, the bank example makes it seem like class, although I think that even people of very lower class positions still have the habit of flipping the switch at night and expecting the electricity to come on. So some of this is class neutral, but some of it is very much class dependent at the same time. Mm-hmm. Someone who's been rich all their lives with very high balances in their bank account, who suddenly loses a lot of money, has to change their habits fast. And it's not pleasant, but it's not a Herculean task. We can do it. Humans know basically how to do this. All humans are capable of learning new habits based on new constraints, even the rich. When we apply this to electricity, though, 1,000 complications immediately present themselves. And it's 1,000 more when we apply this to fuel. Today, we're talking mainly about electricity. How would we watch TV? We probably wouldn't. Would that mean a lot of TV stations go out of business? Yes.
Like Fox News, imagine that, Fox News going out of business.
But although this would be agnostic to the content of what they broadcast, I'm afraid. But would we limit our internet usage, whatever it is we're watching, would we limit our internet usage to what we really needed if we knew that we only had a certain number of hours we could use it? Yes, we would. And we would learn to survive with that. Would we stay up late at night? Probably not. Would we go to bed when it was dark and wake up with the sun? Yes, we probably would. Our ancestors managed to do all that without electronic alarm clocks, and we will too. By the way, candles are very low emission. I'm not worried about regulating candles. How about refrigeration? That's a big one, right? Would we have to go back to the ice box and cellar system? Maybe that wouldn't be so bad, or at least smaller fridges and freezers. We don't need these gigantic machines that dominate the room and that some of us leave half empty most of the time anyhow. That all this so far that we're talking about pertains to household consumption. Industrial consumption is, of course, massively larger. What industrial goods and types of metals and things can we survive without? No new steel means no new skyscrapers getting built. Temporarily, I must stress, all of this is temporary. And I think that's okay. I think we'll be fine without new skyscrapers, without new other large constructions that require metals, that require huge amounts of power to make. We don't need to build a new stadium. Society can survive with a lot less of what it currently expends huge amounts of power to produce. And we must, unless we want our children to burn and starve. So I'll say that again and replace the word can with the word must. Society must survive with a lot less of what it currently expends huge amounts of power to produce.
Matt, let me just repeat something you just said. Unless we want our children to burn and starve, we must make do with less.
And we're trying to figure out how to do it. Having solar panels is great, but it won't get you fully off the hook, although maybe there can be some sort of bonus for having them. But the power that those generate goes into the grid, and they need that power at the hospital, and they need that power at the cooling center that's keeping your neighbors alive in a heat wave. Remember, the whole idea is to increase our collective renewable power sources, not just yours and not just mine, but our collective renewable power sources. It's not a competition for me to get more than you so that I can use more electricity than you or the other way around. It's a collective task of increasing capacity for society. people will become aware of that collective goal when it starts to impact their lives, directly impact their lives. And rationing will do that. It will teach people that using power is hurting everybody. We do, in fact, live together in a society. We impact other people, and other people impact us. We're not isolated individuals who don't affect each other. That's the reality, but that's not the mentality currently. And if we're ever going to make progress on climate, we need the population to learn that emission-generating electricity use is bad. It's bad for the planet on which we all have to live together. Now, I'm not proposing rationing just for the sake of changing minds. I'm proposing rationing for the sake of cutting emissions. It's ultimately about the climate.
Or even more to the point, it's ultimately about extinction.
That's right. Exactly. Not about the morals. The morals are kind of a means to an end and not the end in themselves. At least that's the way I'm currently thinking about it. But changing minds will be of help in cutting emissions. Perhaps people will focus on that goal once there's a limit on their behavior and once they understand that with collective effort, we can relax those limits.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. Today, we're exploring how we might cut emissions by rationing electricity, since it looks like that's going to be the only way to get industrialized countries to seriously cut their power consumption.
So I think that last point, I dare say, might be worth making again. Our sense of climate mitigation as a collective task will get stronger if we have limits on fuel and power consumption and rules by which those limits can go up. And that's a crucial part, rules by which they can go up. As I keep saying, these aren't eternal limits. People should understand that these limits are temporary and they will go up as green energy comes online. Mm-hmm. If we increase our zero emission power sources by X amount, then everybody's monthly limits can go from, say, 500 kilowatt hours to 550 kilowatt hours. And then if we increase our zero emission sources more, then they can go from 550 to 600 kilowatt hours and so on and so on. It should be understood as a collective task based on thresholds of achievement. If the authorities are transparent about the thresholds and the turning points in advance, then people understand the situation, and that helps get buy-in. If we have predefined thresholds that are communicated to the public, then there's more transparency. And with more transparency comes more public tolerance. There's less sense of some shadowy master behind a curtain limiting your freedom. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is how we would cut down on cheating. On cheating the ration. If actual overall consumption is one part of whether everybody's ration goes up and cheaters make overall consumption go up, then cheaters are seen as holding everybody else back. Those transparency targets make it socially disrespectable to cheat because cheating will be seen as harming everybody. This won't all go smoothly, of course, because cheaters who are good won't be easy to detect. We'll end up finding the clumsy cheaters first. And we should try to find ways to detect cheaters. But your main way of limiting cheating is when cheating is seen as morally bad. I can think of at least two forms of cheating that would happen. One is where a person finds some way of exceeding consumption limits in their household without being detected. Some of that would be visible. If the lights are on all night, then it's obvious to anyone looking that that house is cheating. Still, people could go into their basement and burn electricity down there where no one can see, but it would feel like they're sneaking around. It would not feel clean, and hopefully it would not feel fun. Hopefully it would feel shameful. The second form of cheating is a little different. You use the wattage of somebody else's house, like borrowing somebody's phone if you're out of minutes on your account. You could imagine something like this done briefly as a favor, or you could imagine something not so brief, like for payment. I'll pay my neighbor to use some of their ration, kind of black market style. Mm-hmm. Some of that is bound to happen. Or more ugly versions, like under threat or coercion. And if it's threat or coercion, we should punish that like robbery. If you threaten someone and say, I'll hurt you unless you give me your wallet, That is illegal. And if you're caught, there's legal punishment. It should be the same thing. If a neighbor says, I'll hurt you if you don't give me your electrical outlet. Still, that probably will happen. Someone will try to steal from someone else. And we enforce the rules to make that a rare occurrence instead of a common occurrence. The same goes for exceeding capacity of the ration. There need to be punishments for that, not just increased monitoring to make sure you don't do it again, but an actual sanction that makes it not worth doing. I don't have a full proposal of what the sanction should be right now, except that if it's unpleasant and serious, then you can cut down on the cheating fast. Now, we need to give some thought about whether we should make this seasonal and geographically variable, because consumption needs vary from place to place. They need heating in Saskatchewan for part of the year, and they almost never need heating in Mississippi. And yet there's more demand for air conditioning in Mississippi than there is in Saskatchewan. So what do we do about that? I would frame this question as a rationing opportunity, a way of an opportunity to legitimate rationing, because there are places that would need to consume less. And that's easy for everyone to understand. The climate difference between Saskatchewan and Mississippi is easy for everyone to understand. And it legitimates rationing when it varies based on conditions. Now, having said that, the number of temperate places on Earth is rapidly dwindling.
Rapidly.
I mean, the Pacific Northwest was supposed to be the temperate place. And look what temperatures are like there now.
Exactly.
It's literally burning up. But in, say, New York, it's still, as we speak here in July 2021, it's still only truly hot for a few weeks out of the year. And that's going to change. It will get hotter and it will stay hotter for longer. And it, of course, it gets cold in New York, but not the kind of polar cold of places that are far north of us. So New York households should not get the same allotment as, say, northern Quebec, where the fatality rate without some heating would be higher. Or New Mexico, where the fatality rate without some cooling will be far higher. We prioritize those places for zero emission power source construction. If we prioritize those places for the zero emission power source construction, maybe we can come closer to equalizing the rationing across geographic and climatic conditions. There are those who argue that we should just ban air conditioning. These people say humans have lived without it for almost all of our existence, and it consumes huge amounts of energy. We're better off banning it. I'm reluctant to support that because it's been cooler for almost all of our existence. And we're already in a situation where on the hottest days, people will have true medical problems, or some might even die if they don't have access to some sort of artificial cooling.
Exactly. Plus, we've created, Matt, all these urban heat islands where there's no trees, no green, no shades. And these are places where people of color are particularly vulnerable to excessive heat events.
Indeed. So we probably need some sort of artificial cooling to exist as a technology and to still be used as a technology. Now, obviously not an entire large house of like a 4-bedroom house occupied by 2 people and cooling the entire house down. You need one cool room per couple of people to survive through a heat wave. You do not need the whole house. We're trying to limit consumption here. Obviously not air conditioning set to 65 degrees Fahrenheit, but set to more like 80 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever level you can get by on, which is hopefully a lot higher than 65. So we're consuming only what we need to get by. I wonder about 2 things though. First, can we find a way to limit air conditioning availability to those very worst days and then increase the ration once the temperature gets above a certain threshold? As in certain days, you get a higher ration. I worry that some people will abuse that and leave the television on instead of helping each other survive. I also worry that this will undermine our goal of cutting the overall use. I mean, obviously, increasing the ration cuts against the whole idea. But because heat kills, we need to consider this and try to think through it. I wonder if, along the lines of what I was saying about transparency, can we predetermine what levels of consumption would make us decrease the ration? As in, okay, if temperature is above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, then the ration goes up. But if we collectively use a certain amount during that time, then when the temperature drops, the ration goes down to lower than it was before, not to say 500 watts, but instead to 400 watts. So we make up for our usage in peak times by using less outside of peak times. And there's this cascading series of thresholds, all announced in advance, so it's not experienced as punishment, that allows us to survive the worst times and still cut our overall emissions severely. It's understood as we have to make do with less power, and maybe this is how we can do it and stay alive. Now, I threw out 100 Fahrenheit because it's a round number that's very hot. I'm not going to stand by that number. We can get a group of medical professionals together and have them indicate the temperature above which the medical complications get more serious and try to set the threshold there. There are 1,000 practical problems, as Elise pointed out. What about how it's a few degrees hotter in this neighborhood than a neighborhood a mile away because of more green space or better ventilation between buildings or more asphalt or whatever? I worry about that. My current view is don't try to fine-tune this too much. I think we need to give serious thought to how to keep the most vulnerable among us healthy and how to keep everybody healthy. And maybe what we should do is put the temperature gauge in the hottest neighborhood and have that be what sets the threshold for everybody. But
that sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, something where, you know, we're trying to save lives is after all the goal. But I also think we have to be aware of like a thicket of regulations and complex thresholds that become difficult to understand. Mm-hmm. It has to be functional, this whole rationing system, but it also has to be understandable to the public. And simple rules are more likely to be perceived as fair. They're also just more likely to be perceived in the first place. If it takes fine print to communicate, then no one will read the fine print, and the scheme will all seem like mysterious and alien and legalistic and bad. We have to avoid that if this is ever going to work. The whole scheme has to be conveyable on a poster, like a poster presentation at a conference or the equivalent of a few slides of a PowerPoint presentation. Maybe a big poster, but if you can read a poster, you can understand this. It should be like that rather than pages and pages of fine print.
You know, like one of those World War II posters that says, save rubber, check your tires now. That was actually a real poster back in the day.
Did it have like graphs and arrows and numbers,
yes, and
tables and stuff?
And a picture of a car with a, you know, with it and pointing to the rubber tires. So it was
maybe
very
something
effective.
Like that.
Yes.
So a flawless system isn't going to be possible. You convey to people that there's reasons for things and you're doing the best you can, but you can't regulate a large population case by case. You have to have collective rules. And often that does mean obscuring variations across cases. You do your best at setting the thresholds to the levels where there's the most good and the least suffering. You learn from experience and you periodically adjust the thresholds if you have to. Remember, what we're trying to do is lower the suffering from what suffering would be without rationing. We're trying to lower suffering from what it would be without rationing. Mm-hmm. So yes, I am prepared to tell people they have to turn off their air conditioners, except under certain extreme circumstances, and to tell them what those extreme circumstances are, and to tell them where the free publicly available cooling center is in their neighborhood. One cooling center in each neighborhood would save a huge amount of emissions compared to cooling every last house.
And you are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. Matthew's been exploring how we might cut emissions by rationing electricity. It's what we must do if we are going to survive our climate crisis.
There's going to be surely 1,000 requests for exemptions, the vast majority of which we will have to deny. Someone will say, can we get a higher ration for having more children? Nope. Can we buy another house and get twice the ration if it's by house? Or a third house and get 3 times the ration? I mean, that's a wealthy person question. But we should find a way to prevent that from happening and not let the super rich just go from house to house or yacht to yacht, as the case may be, living unconstrained while the rest of us endure. We should find a way to not allow that to happen and tie the ration to the person or to the family or to some sort of unit so that they can't just buy several different houses and then, you know, exhaust the ration for each house.
Can you imagine being able to do that?
No, but I can imagine. I mean, I just know cognitively that there are people who can.
Yes.
I think, what is it, $500 million was Jeff Bezos's yacht price. And he doesn't notice that expense. That expense makes no difference to him whatsoever.
Yeah.
So You know, there's plenty more to say. I mean, we've barely even gotten to fuel, and there's 100 other considerations, but we're out of time for this week. This is just meant to start the conversation on rationing. I don't see a lot of conversation happening on it. The core claim we're making is that rationing electricity and fuel is going to be necessary to cut emissions. We don't like it, but we like seas rising and land burning up a lot less.
So yes, we really do believe that rationing will be necessary. We're not rooting for this. We don't like the idea of it any more than you do. We don't like the idea of living with less power and less resources than we have before. The problem, though, has a lot to do with convincing people that this is really necessary, that it's going to save huge amounts of lives, and to help people take seriously the fact that climate is an emergency and justifies emergency level responses.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
The Supreme Court recently agreed to hear a case out of Mississippi that could completely overturn or drastically restrict women's right to abortion. Already there is only one abortion clinic in the entire state of Mississippi. What does this mean for the women who live there? And what could the future look like if Roe v. Wade is overturned?
Abortion is just a small part of this. We actually have them on video saying their goal is to make this a theocracy.
Tune in to We Only Want the World with me, Sansara Taylor, this Tuesday, July 20th, from 7 to 8 p.m. for my full interview with Dorenda Hancock and more, right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C.
Mindfield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse, family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Activist Sharon Salam speaks out for WBAI.
We should be moving forward, collecting the funds that we need to make sure that our station is whole and that it can do its job as it has done for me in the past. When all of this stuff happened to me many, many years ago in 1989, I didn't get very many opportunities to speak out in regards to the wrong that was done to my son and the other boys in the Central Park jogger case, as it was called at that time. Very few people stepped up. Yes, Like It Is was there, WBAI was there, and a few others. Majority of those stations that let people like myself speak and tell them what was going on the other side, those stations are gone. If we lose WBAI, where do we go to get our words out? Where do we go if you've been arrested unjustly? Where do you go if someone's taken your children unfairly? Where do you go to seek justice? We must keep this station alive. Yeah. Alive. WBAI.
No justice.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI.